Welcome to Highway Diary and the Metal Hand of God podcast.
Yes, thank you.
We're doing a podcast together. We're recording simultaneously. Mm-hmm. You'll find this as Metal Hand of God podcast 205 or 206.
Somewhere in there.
Look for Eric Hollerbach. And episode 135 for Highway Diary. Wow. Look at that. Cooperation at its finest.
It is worth pointing out that Wayne is sick, and because we're recording live, Rum is not able to be here.
Right.
So for those of you who do enjoy our show, The Metal Hand of God, or those of you who haven't heard it before, this is going to be a very unusual episode because it's just me and Eric just talking, chilling at the Bucks.
Yeah, we're at Starbucks. We kind of wanted to meet in like a location that was a little bit in between us. I was a little late because I didn't pinch off my loaf fast enough. I was mid-shit going, I think I'm going to be 15 minutes late now. Because sometimes I eat a lot of steak. I don't know if you know this, Adam. And
you look like a carnivore.
I am. But I work out, but I eat a lot of steak. And sometimes I'm screaming on the toilet, you know?
Really?
Doesn't always go smooth.
You know, when I look at you, I see, like, I can, you know, you hear about all these different things that we might have evolved from, and I can see, you know, there's definitely some T-Rex in you. You got the teeth.
Uh-huh.
You got the teeth.
The tiny teeth and the little...
the little arms.
The little arms.
No, I don't think your arms are that little.
All right. Well.
So.
Whoa. A lot of things have been going on Facebook.
Right.
You know, we put me on a show called A Twist of Lime this past month. And that I appreciate it, you know, when...
Was that a month ago? Yeah, it was at the end of July, beginning of August.
Yeah.
So, yeah, about a month ago.
So,
The Full Metal Comedy, which occurs at Twist of Lime, it is monthly. I'm the host, unfortunately, for a lot of people, including the comedians.
You're dipping your toes in the stand-up very slowly. The first time I did it, like, 4 months ago,
mm-hmm.
you were just like, give it up for this person. You said nothing.
Did I host that?
Yeah, you were the host, but you just brought up people. You didn't say a word.
You know what? That was my first time hosting. And I don't know. You probably don't know what happened at the end of that. Corey came up after it was all done and was like, you can't do that anymore. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, if you're going to host, you got to tell jokes. And I was like, but I don't tell jokes. I'm like, that's not, I don't do that. Like, he's like, if you're going to be host, you got to, I don't know what sides of Corey you've seen, but I'm always amused, like, because Corey's a very silly person, and then every once in a while, he gets really serious and scares the crap out of him.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, if Corey's listening to this, dude, you can't, like, do the, you have to have different moods, or just choose one. Like, you can't mess with people like that.
He does switch. Corey's is a very good friend of mine. I love the guy.
So I think everybody loves Corey. Well, from according to that podcast that I listen to, maybe everybody doesn't, according to him.
Well, I don't know why. I think Corey Mack's a hilarious guy. He's got a show always at the Rock and Blues in Covington on Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad motherfucker. But we were writing a reality show together, me and him.
Really?
We've basically made a little treatment. I don't know what we'll do with it, if anything. Mm-hmm. But it was like a reality show concept, and I don't want to go into it. So we were just writing it together, and then he gave me an idea, and then I said, I'm not sure if we could shoot that because of this and that, and he goes, don't step on my dreams, bro. Don't step on my dream. And he was like super serious all of a sudden. I was like, I wasn't trying to step on his dreams, so I was trying to talk about more his formatting.
I'll step on his dreams.
Formatting of
I'll call you up.
I don't know, but he's...
I'll roast battle you. Which I do want to talk about. You're doing the roast battle.
Yeah, tonight. I have a show called Sunday Roast Battle at the Lawn of Wee. We have two more dates scheduled. Tomorrow I'm going to schedule it for the next 2 years.
Wow.
Once a month for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the next ones are September 20th and then also October 18th of 2015.
September 20th, so it's 3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, from the date that this is recording, not the date that it airs. Although you said September 20th, so I'm sure people can figure that out.
They'll figure it out. They got time. You can buy tickets on Groupon for $4 or $5 at the door for those shows.
I got it, and I listened to the, I ended up missing the roast battle that Kyle and Jake Potter, Kyle Smith and Jake Potter went up against each other. And you, like, almost like you were listening. you included that actual roast between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed. I was actually, but I think both of them got in some good licks. And at one point, Kyle said something like, "Your face looks like you got hit with a pot of hot grits."
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I was slapping the wheel. I was very amused. So no, roast battle. I love that. I love that idea. First of all, I like the idea that you have comedians going up against each other, and like, I was on a road trip, and there was a church group that I ran into. They had shirts that apparently this is a Bible verse that says, "Iron sharpens iron, men sharpen men," which sounds more like gay porn than a Bible quote. But
men sharpen men.
Yeah, the idea is that like you can't get better on your own.
I see.
Like, you got to test yourself against other people. So, like, you have comics and, you know, y'all go on stage. And so there is a loose competition where it's like, who was the funny, you know, who was funnier throughout the night. But there's not two guys like, all right, you're going to do your best and I'm going to do my best. And I think y'all can get better as comedians by doing things like that.
Yeah. And I think if anyone listened to episode 135 of Highway Diary, that was called Band at Hi-Ho. That's kind of how it all happened. I mean, I was also in Los Angeles, and I performed at the Comedy Store has a roast battle,
mm-hmm.
and they basically invented this idea.
Right.
And I performed at that show early when it was an open mic. That show started as a partial open mic show, mm-hmm. just to get people in and stuff. But then it kind of took on a life of its own. But I knew the organizers. I asked them for advice and stuff, and they're super cool with me doing it. And everything's cool. But, you know, I started getting annoyed because, you know, I got banned from the Hi-Ho, obviously. I don't want to talk about this every fucking show. But the only reason why I'm talking to you about this is because you were on that episode. Right.
Which we'll get into in a minute. But I love the idea. And I think, I just think... Number one, for whatever reason, sometimes in some communities, people need gimmicks to sort of bring them in.
Right.
And I think it's not exactly a gimmick, but it sort of is, you know. And
yeah.
It's something unique that you're not going to see.
Yeah. You know?
So, but I also think that, I hate to say this, but I feel like a certain amount of comedians in like the southeast Louisiana that are kind of lazy about their writing. And doing something like that, you can't just go in with, like, the material that you did 3 weeks ago.
Right.
You know, like, it's like, all right, what am I going to say about this guy? Yeah. How am I going
to
hit him?
It's very important for me to let the comics know a month ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if they don't write for a month, it'll be in the back of their head. It's impossible for it not to. If you know a month from now you got to do this ridiculous blood sport with another comic where you're going to try to say the meanest shit possible, I want that person in the back of your head for a month. So that maybe you'll write 2 weeks out. Maybe you'll start writing 1 week out. But at least you'll have raw material to pull from. It's very important for me to organize. It's not an easy show to put on. Because it's very easy to get comics to just do their stand-up set. They would love to do that. It's hard to go, hey, have 3 minutes ready to go. And if you look bad, it could go real bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's very, it's kind of scary.
But that's how you get better, and it's the same as when you started doing open mics.
Right, of course.
You're going to bomb, and that's how you know whether or not you're cut out for it.
Right.
But speaking of writing jokes, and we'll go into the stuff about that episode and my thoughts on it in a little bit, but sort of part of that episode is, like, the PC society that we live in and, like doing jokes and how people take it. You know, briefly, but like we'll get into it later, but one of the things that Polk said about you is that you're not funny.
Right.
Here's the thing. Like, I look, there's a lot of things, people that I don't find funny professionally or whatever, personally, but like, who's the arbiter of that ultimately? And like, if he sees you one night and you have a bad performance, look, the guys at the top of the comedy food chain have bad nights. I've seen Dave Attell do jokes that aren't landing. You're telling me, you know, Eric Hollaback isn't allowed to have an off night? You know, like, what? what, you know, what goes into that, you know, and who, like, it's just such a weird thing. And it's also weird that, you know, we live in this politically correct society where some people are allowed to make certain jokes and some people aren't. And some of those people, it's not necessarily racial or sexual or what have you. Sometimes it's just, well, that joke landed, so it's okay. Yeah. But then the next guy comes and his joke doesn't
land. Right.
Which is what I'm about to get into. Now, we're around people, so I'm going to edit this joke in a way that doesn't offend anyone that... You know, like, this isn't, we're not on stage where you know what you're getting into. Like if you're offended by my joke, oh well, there are people behind us that aren't a part of this. So,
innocent bystanders,
like people who don't want to get run over by my car, my comedy train. So I've been doing jokes since that night that you saw me host.
Right.
I've done it 3 or 4 times, and it's like 2 minutes. Because I figure I can get away with that. I'll go up and I'll do a little bit of stand-up, then I'll introduce people. Everything's cool. And I feel like my goal should be to be entertaining, not necessarily. I'm not a stand-up, so I'm not going to try and pretend like I am. I'm a weekend warrior, so to speak. But the way I work is, like, I don't... Because I'm hosting and I know it's mostly the same audience, I try not to do the same material every week. So what ends up happening is, the week before the show, I start freaking out. Because I'm like, all right, what am I going to say? And I'll sort of cycle through material. And I'm talking like 20 or 30 different jokes over the course of a week. And like I'll be like, oh, that's good, I can do that one. And then like a couple of days later, I'll be like, no, maybe I shouldn't do that one.
Yeah.
Like, I'll psych myself out.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening ultimately is, the night before the show, whether it's Friday or Saturday, I'll just come up with something then. So it'll be a week of waste.
Right.
But I had a bit that I was going to do. So the show that I'm about to do is September 4th, which is this Friday. The comedians on it are Red Bean, Carrie B, Nature Boy, Corey Mack, and Trey Romero. So that's 4 black men and 1 white guy. Now, this joke should be fine, because in my head I'm like, well, they're all comedians. But then I'm like, well, I'm not a comedian. If I don't land the joke, like,
right.
Now, I don't think Corey's going to be mad at me, but, and Trey won't either. Those other guys don't know me.
Right.
So, basically, the joke is this. So, don't you love it when someone sets up their joke in such a way that there's no chance of it ever being funny, and tells you that he's editing out everything that gives it its impact? But, a couple of weeks ago, my boss came up to me, and I was cutting, some plastic zip ties. Cutting something off, and he looked at me and he said, I'm gonna go get you a pair of dykes. And I froze and I was like, oh, I don't think they're gonna be able to help me with this. So apparently dykes used to refer to wire cutters, and I thought, well, that seems silly, like, because when you think dyke, there's like dams, then there's the slur, and I don't know anybody that refers to wire cutters by that phrase. And I was like, well, maybe we should, like, cut out the innocuous definitions for this slur. You know, it's like, you wouldn't go to a grocery store if you wanted to smoke and pick up a pack of, you can guess what the next word is. But so I have this joke in my head, and I'm like, that's, if I land it, that's, it's funny enough.
Right.
But then again, I start psyching myself out.
Because you're just thinking about, oh, I'm going to say the word fags at the end of this. And right. Who's going to be pissed off?
Right. So so I'm like, is Nature Boy going to say, look, dude, I'm not performing this show. Number one, you're the host. What are you doing this for? You know,
Look, I've said...
I'm just using the, I don't know Nature Boy. I'm not,
right.
You know, but go on.
I mean, all those people perform at Comedy Gumbo every Thursday. They're mm-hmm. probably there right now at the Howlin' Wolf. I mean, I've said ridiculous shit. I've done all my material in front of them, so they've heard mm-hmm. it all. I've never seen those guys kick out anyone for doing anything.
Right.
I mean, if some white dude started dropping the N-bomb, then they would probably get kicked out. But
right.
And also, probably they would kind of make sure that he was safe on his way out, that nobody else... I don't right. know. I'm not saying Red Bean's going to get in front of somebody's punch. But I'm saying they might be like, hey, okay, they're right. trying stuff. They're trying right, right, stuff. Right. So, I mean, I think it's all about confidence. Like, if you're like, yeah, I'm fucking doing this. I mean, like, I know people like Joey Coco Diaz says that word all the time. He's
But that dude's come very close to straight up murdering people.
Yeah, he's kidnapped people. He's a felon.
Right.
He's kind of, when he says it with such authority and that thick Jersey accent, you're like, I'm not changing this guy. Mm-hmm. Who's going to change this guy?
Right.
So why are we even going to start the conversation? That's what kind of blows me away, though, about the comedy scene in New Orleans, because I found that when I came here, it was, like, very politically correct. I had a fiction class that I had one class of, and I dropped it at University of New Orleans, because people were just, instead of talking about what was good or bad about my fiction story, they were just talking about which and which fictitious character was exploited or, like, slut-shamed or called a MILF or reduced. I said a Hawaiian bouncer at one point. They were like, Hawaiian, you can't, what? You can't say Hawaiian bouncer. You can't say Hawaiian bouncer?
Is that a euphemism for something?
No, I'm saying the guy was like a Samoan dude, just so that people would get a thing. But it's like, oh, that's like gender reducing or whatever the fuck. And it's just like, when I see the comics doing this stuff where they're just like, I think it's really the universities just coddling everybody that, oh, let's cushion your ears from words. Are you fucking kidding me? How else would we talk about something completely, deeply enough to understand all the complex issues in it? You can say faggot and make the greatest point in chemistry that has ever been made. It wouldn't be like E equals MC faggot, but it would be like, these faggoty electrons, they're doing this. Whoa, they are doing that. I don't know why he had to say that word. But just, are we going to close our ears off from the possibly beautiful, philosophical, nuanced points that a comic can say because he used your trigger words?
Right.
You got too many trigger words. That's in your fucking head. That's your problem. How about you go deal with that outside?
Right.
Go blog about it, stupid. Well, you would never have the balls to stand up and try to say, oh, I'm offended by trigger words. That's your stand-up set? Go fucking suck dicks, stupid. No one would be... Who would find that entertaining? This is what I'm victimized by, and this is what I'm victimized by. I was slut-shamed, and people, when they look at me, they rape-gaze me. Applause. No, that would never happen.
At this point, I want to point out to the audience that Eric is actually doing the handheld microphone, like, fist maneuver. No, I'm with you. And it's ultimately, like, diminishing to art.
Yes.
Like, I forget what I was talking about the other day, but political correctness doesn't foster a more sensitive society. It just takes away thoughtfulness.
Look at what the Prohibition did for alcohol. Okay, look at what the Prohibition did for alcohol. When booze was illegal, everyone said, fuck you, and they drank five more times. Mm-hmm. The mob got all the money. When, right now, drugs are illegal. There would be no Mexican mafia making billions of dollars if weed was just legal. If weed was legal in America, the Mexican mob would be bankrupt overnight. Right. And we would have medicine that works. Mm-hmm. When you put, like, cushions around things, when you make things illegal, words illegal, then it puts them in a more dangerous category. You're saying, don't, we can never possibly contextualize these words. They're dangerous. Never say them.
Well, that's the other thing, is that ultimately, in like we've seen this slowly over the course of, like, the last 10, 15 years, but what we've learned to do is focus on the word, which is essentially a symbol, and not the intent. Because that's the thing. Words aren't about the actual language. It's about the intent behind it.
Right.
And there's so many, so often that you see, like, when these politically correct, like somebody lost their job or what have you, where you're taking the intent out of it. There was a woman who was flying home to South Africa, and she was a public relations person for some company. And she had made a joke about how she was going home to South Africa, where she's from, and she was like, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. Now, is it a clever joke? Kinda. Like, it's cute. It's not ha-ha, but it's like, alright, I get you. But, like, they had, like, just swarms of people on the internet, like, they became a hashtag, like, because she was losing her livelihood as she was on this 8-hour flight.
Yes.
And it's like...
I talked about this on the Highway Diary with Sean Murphy. I played the Joe Rogan Experience was talking about it, and guy John Ronson wrote a book about, like, people being targeted on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, like this pile-on mentality of people getting piling on.
Oh, but we're pack animals. It's total pack mentality.
And they were. What was interesting about that was even people that were saying, "I hope that woman gets raped." Nobody attacked them because we're not smart enough to attack two people at once.
Because she, well, also because, like, she's an approved target.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, people, there are approved targets and non-approved. And when you point out, hey, that person just did the same thing, yeah, but they're okay.
Yeah.
They're one of us.
And, like, the stupider the person is, the worse things they're going to say. And I've said this many times, and I'll say this again. Andrew Heelan, after the Jeff McCormick episode came out, I tried to say, hey, Andrew Heelan. Andrew Heelan, why do you hate me on Facebook and stuff? You're like saying that he posted in Comics of the Gulf South, don't book Eric Hollaback. And I said to his face, what do you want to have a conversation about why you're angry at me? And he just goes, go away. You're a garbage person. Go die in a bucket of AIDS. Why don't you fucking kill yourself? Why don't you? And I'm like, how? That is the dumbest person I've ever had a conversation with in my life, because it's like, if you can't just defend yourself with rationally, it's like, if anybody was like, I have a problem with you, but hey, let's get a beer, let's talk about this like adults, that is the sign of a mature person.
Right.
If you came to me and said, we have different political opinions, let's get a beer and talk about it. And I just started screaming in your face. Or let's just be friends
and we don't necessarily have to hate each other just because
we have differences. Or just let's have it, talk about it just so we know what the argument is, so we can have a rational conversation about it. If you start screaming at someone, you're the dumbest, least mature person in the world, Andrew Heelan.
I love it. I love it when someone says to you either, like, you should go kill yourself, or you should die, or you shouldn't be allowed to have kids. And I always go, so you're in favor of eugenics?
Yeah.
Like, that's what that is.
Because I made a podcast, at least I went out swinging.
Right.
I went out swinging from my own effort. I hung a noose. Do some effort. Write some jokes.
Do you feel like the Interpol thing comes out of the Jeff McCormick thing?
100%, yeah.
Okay, so... Well, actually, you just became an approved target because...
Well, it's kind of an interesting story because there was a few scenes in the episode 133 where my arguments with Andrew Polk were reenacted.
Right.
When I recorded the Jeff McCormick episode back in January... I said, hey, Jeff McCormick, how about you reenact some things for me? You pretend to be Andrew Polk.
Oh, really?
That is why everything happened. Revenge for me doing that. Because he knew I was putting out Bandit Hi-Ho. Mm-hmm. He knew what it was about. But I, here's the thing. This happened in January, right? Mm-hmm. I got banned from Hi-Ho in fucking January. I worked on it for probably every single day for 4 hours for like a long time because I was pissed off about what happened. Because I have I have 13 years of comedy experience when I moved here, right? And I've never seen anything like the morons I've had to deal with here. So I was, as an exercise in my own sanity, I started documenting what my perspective on this scenario. Because I think it's pretty obvious what's going on. And when I've told 100 people what I got banned for, they're like, but it's comedy. Everyone had the same reaction. So I knew I had something going here. And then when I made... It was like I was using McCormick against him. Then he tried to use McCormick against me by saying that I was making fun of him.
Which sadly worked.
A tremendously good PR move. Like, you know, Goebbels saying that the Nazis are great, like a propagandist. He is but when you have the truth on your side, I mean, people could say that episode 133 is me being a propagandist, trying to make me look good, but I feel like I show you all the audio.
Right.
I kind of lay everything naked, and it's not until Gene Shorts bashed your show that I was on. That everything, I was like, you know what? I have this old podcast that I haven't fucking, you know, put out yet. That's pretty fucking explosive. It's pretty fucking good. So I put another 20 hours into it, polished it up. I sent the MP3 to everybody who was in it.
Right.
Right?
Including me.
Including
and
you guys.
Although technically it was me and Rome, but irrelevant.
Yeah. So, and I wanted to make sure everyone, I'm not exploiting fucking anyone in this podcast. I'm not taking what you said out of context. Right. I did everything as good as possible. And then I put it out, and I'm so shocked how there's been zero backlash on Facebook. Are you surprised by it? Have you been watching this?
I've been waiting to see if anything happens, but we sort of run in different circles.
Right.
Like, I know some comedians, but...
Not one person. Not one person has said anything negative about it.
Well, from what I've been told, this dude has a reputation for doing that. Like, I was told, and I don't want to mention the name of the comic, but we were told that we shouldn't take it personally because Andrew Polk just dislikes you. And my thought was, yeah, well, he's bashing our show. You're damn right I'm going to take it personal. Also, I know Eric Hollerback. Maybe not. We're not best friends. I don't know your entire life story. Right. But I like you. And I'm given reason to dislike him, so I'm just going to go with your word over his.
Right.
You know, and the way I work is, you know, like, particularly my best friends. But I look at everyone like, if you're nice to me, you can be part of my family. That's all it takes is just loyalty and decency to be part of my family.
Right.
And I'm Italian. You fuck with my family, and it's, you know, no. It's not, I'm not going to not take that personally. But in any case, he's bashing the whole show, and I've also been told that he likes dislikes other comedians on that show as well. So, either way, what difference does it make? Like, it's still, and suppose, like, from what I was told, this guy has a reputation for doing that. And beyond all that, so the clip that used of me was interesting because it was the only one from an actual podcast. That was from our episode 200, Build Something. And so to briefly recap that, I was on vacation in the Smoky Mountains when I found out that Gene Shorts, which is a fake account, attacked our show. Or attacked the Full Metal Comedy show. And so we cycled through a couple things, Wayne and I talked, and I was really angry. There was a few minutes where I was violently angry.
Yeah.
But I'm a grown man. That's not how you solve your problems.
But it does seem like a betrayal, you know. It's like you're trying to do this thing. You mm-hmm. in your head, all you're trying to do is pay the comics out, mm-hmm. give them a chance to work out another 10 minutes mm-hmm. of their stuff in a different venue outside New Orleans.
And as I mentioned, we don't take a cut. We've taken a cut a few times. In fact, I think we took $7 off the last show. I performed on that last show.
Right.
Like, now, not as many minutes as our comics. But, I mean, if you're the host, shouldn't you take a cut? You know, much less the promoter.
Right.
But we don't do that because we know, like, we're still trying to build a scene. And that's the whole thing. Like, put aside Polk. Like, what I think is beautiful about that episode is it exposes the ugliness that goes on a lot. Not all the time, but a lot behind the scenes in New Orleans comedy scene. And what these people that are causing that ugliness is, and it isn't just Andrew Polk. There's plenty of other people that are a part of that. All that ugliness means that you'll never get the Los Angeles comedy scene. You'll never get New York. And it's not because of the population. It's because if you don't work together, you can't build anything.
And the thing is, like, if you're obsessed with comedy, like, if you, like, you know, you never know who's gonna pop. 10 years from now, you know, maybe Polk will be the biggest thing in the world, and he'll fuck my career over. It seems unlikely. Only the fact that if you go around fucking with other comics all the time, or saying this show sucks, yeah, we'll give that person 10 years, and everything's different. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll have a Netflix special in 3 years. You know, like, there's so don't. Mm-hmm. Why would you ever? And then why would you want multiple comics going, if I make it, I will do anything in my power to fuck that person? Because fuck that person. Why would you want bad karma out there?
Right.
It doesn't make
Which
any sense
into
to me.
Which goes into what your friend Yvonne was talking about. Yes. Like, and she, I guess she runs La Nuit.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, she was talking about, look, I've got industry contacts that were at this festival, and you're not going to meet these people, and you're developing a bad reputation.
And when I say that, like, Yvonne worked in Chicago, she worked in L.A., I started it at the UCB, I was a performer there, I'd done stand-up there, I've moved to L.A., mm-hmm. you know, I've got friends, I have friends all over the place. If you look, if anyone who becomes friends with me sees I'm mutual friends with, like, all the comics they know, mm-hmm. because I make it a point every time I go out, if I meet a new comic, I'm like, you're a brother, you know, mm-hmm. and then
so let's
we
say
can keep
just,
in touch with
just
each other.
Just because you use the name, I don't know whether you know him or not, but let's say Joey Coco Diaz is in town.
Yeah.
And he's looking to, right. like take a local guy with him, and he, like, let's say he knows him, he's like, Eric, so who are the guys?
Of course.
Who are the guys?
And Joey Coco Diaz, when he's in town, he does, like, performing at the La Nuit, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, right now, really, Kelly Stone and Mike Swenson are the managers there. Yvonne kind of has taken a back seat
because she's
pregnant
got a lot of
and stuff.
And,
you know, but I mean, really, I'm one of the kind of sneaky managers over there as well because I'm helping them rebuild the La Nuit, you know. Mm. And so it's like, you know what I mean? It's not. I'm not even saying, oh, I got power over at a club. Don't fuck with me. But
no,
I mean,
But what good does it do to tear things down?
Right.
Ultimately. And here's my other thing. One of my complaints about a lot of comics, I feel like a lot of them don't do enough writing. And I mentioned that earlier about the rap battles. And instead of, regardless of who it is, Andrew Polk or anybody else, because there are other comics that I've told you about that I've had personal problems with, that whatever. Instead of going screw with other comics, why aren't you working on your writing?
Yeah.
Why aren't you going on stage? Like, I don't see, you know, whoever it is, Joe Rogan or Dave Attell. I seriously doubt when they were in their, like, 20s and 30s that they were standing around going, let's see if we can get this guy banned from my show.
Let's see if we can Photoshop someone's festival poster to right. make it look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to have that kind of time, you are a vindictive little cunt. Like, you're not...
Right.
Like, what is... What kind of spiraling demons do you have in your head that are satisfied and make your brain come because you're making a parody poster? What serotonin? How broken is your brain? How many, like, to where serotonin is injected in your head where you're bashing someone else's festival? It blows me away. I've worked in New York and Los Angeles, I was saying before. This does not happen there.
You're more
ever.
Likely to get blackballed
it
doing something like that.
It super doesn't happen. And I don't think mm-hmm. they understand this. It doesn't happen. It
right.
does not happen. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. I've never seen it before. So when I saw it here, it blew me away. I was like,
right.
what are these people doing?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because everyone understands that even if that person sucks and he gets a sitcom mm-hmm. and they write a character that makes him think of you, even if you're not good friends, he's seen your act, he thinks you're funny, you've given him nothing but nice things to say about him, you know, you shake hands, and how hard is it to just
right.
be like, hey, thanks for putting me on your show,
right.
thanks for doing this and that. It takes nothing, you know, and it's like to
especially
not do that.
Especially when you know the person's not being mean-spirited. That's the important part to me, but, you know, we talked about the Polk, jean shorts, whatever incident. Mm-hmm. on the show on what was intended to be our live show but ended up being like just me and Rum talking.
Right.
And the episode was called Build Something.
Yeah.
And so like I said, like I got really mad. It was about an hour where I was just furious. And I mean I was in a car with somebody driving for 3 hours and they had to listen to me for one of those hours just like venting about people they've never heard of. And at the conclusion of it, I came to one thing, and we didn't mention Polk's name. Not because I give a damn, but because, like, true, I told you when, like, I didn't have a chance to fully review the episode before you aired it, but I was like, number one, I doubt you're taking me out of context. Number two, I mean, there's really no, like, I don't care. Like, what's he going to do to me? Like I've told you before, you can take away the comedy shows. If no other comic, I doubt that it'll ever happen, but if no other comic ever wanted to work with us again, all right, we ain't making any money off of it anyway. We're podcasters.
Right.
So,
just
I don't
do
really
your
care.
Metal show. And
right.
But I see what you're doing. I'm like, hey, this is another gig that, you know, you can, you know, I'm sure even if you book me once every 4 or 5 months or whatever, cool. I got a gig to look forward to where I can sharpen 15 minutes. And thanks for the opportunity. Audience. Why would anybody go right on? You know, we're all struggling at the grassroots level, trying to get something going, trying to build a community, trying to build a show, trying to build something. Me with the Sunday Roast Battle at the La Nuit as well. My show, you know, it's taken me, I only have it once a month as well. And my last one, I lost $30. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was important when I said, I'm going to pay everybody 10 bucks that I did that. Right. And sure, I lost $30, but we had an awesome show. Right. And I kept my promise. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And so, I don't know. But so, like...
Well, my thing is, conclusion I came to on that episode was... You can hate me. You can attack me. And we've had, like, at this point, we've had, like, four or five different sets of people personally attack Imhoff. Which is hilarious, considering, like, we're a good show, but we're still very, very small.
Right.
You know? So it's very weird. It's not like we're famous, you know? Like, right. It's weird. Like, you're going to make your bones off of attacking us? All right, whatever. I'm not going to give any of those people credibility. That's the only reason I didn't mention Polk's name. I was like, he doesn't listen to the show anyway, so what does it matter? You can come after me. You can do whatever you want. I'm going to keep building things. I'm not going to focus on people who hate us forever, whatever reason. And I see you've done that yourself. Like, you... On some level, you have to deal with it because, unfortunately, you're a comedian and you can't do that in a vacuum. So you have to deal with these people to some degree or another. And there's only so many places to do stand-up in New Orleans. There's more than a few down. But it's not like L.A. or New York or Chicago, where you can go just about anywhere and do stand-up somewhere. So you do have to deal with those people on some level. But you took that negative and you're like, all right, like, that gives me an idea. Other people, you know, like, they go settle their hash on comedy roast battles in the comedy store. So why not do that here? People got a lot of hash to settle here in New Orleans for whatever reason.
But then when you look at the little squirrely Facebook demon right in the face and go, hey, why don't you show up, bitch? They say nothing. So what does that tell you? You know what I mean?
It tells me that it's easier to be a small fish than to ever actually have to confront things and get better.
But now it's like I've been around the world enough to just go, oh, you're terrified that they're going to kick you out of the scene if you don't call this person a garbage person. You operate out of fear. Oh, you don't respond and say, yes, I do have things to say to you, and I'm funnier than you, so you have fear. Okay, so you're a scared bitch, so that's what it is. Now I'm confident, I'm old enough to just go, oh, you're a scared bitch, you don't want to do that, and you're only you know, got courage under pseudonyms on Facebook? Well, you're a bitch then. That's what the answer to that is, you know?
You know, I listen to a bunch of podcasts, and one of them I listen to is Jay Moore. And he talks a lot about how most of his career, he was a dick.
Right.
Like, and he's known as that. And in fact, a lot of comedians still can't stand him. He's a very talented guy.
Right.
But they won't accept him. And some of that's just because of how he behaved, how selfish he was as a comic when it came to other comics.
I think Mark Maron also says that he has beefs with different comics, but my beef is just like, you're mean, don't be mean.
Right.
That's my beef. Don't scream in my face when I'm trying to offer an olive branch, when I'm saying, hey, let's talk as men. You scream in my face, don't be irrational.
You can dislike somebody and not have to have beef or have hatred. You can be on a show with somebody you don't necessarily agree with or don't necessarily get along with without it being a thing, you know, without it being, I'm not going to work if you're going to hire that person.
Right.
Which we, you know, again, mostly because I don't really feel like getting into it with people. I got enough people attacking me as it is. But I'm not going to mention names, but we were asked to kick you off one of our shows. And we were like, nah, we're not going to do that. Number one.
Are you saying the last show?
No.
This one?
Well, I mean, I guess technically, if you really want to argue, I guess in a way, people were looking to get rid of you one way or the other, but we were specifically asked the first show to take you off.
Yeah.
And we're not getting involved in that. Like, well, why? Like, has this dude done anything to us? No? All right. Or he exploited a person who was autistic. All right. Like, was it funny? That's my first question. If it's funny, I don't care. Like did the person, like, he didn't drag him out in the street and like say 20 points if you hit him. Like, what am I supposed to do about that?
I mean, I will still maintain that I think Jeff McCormick is my favorite comic to watch. I howl laughing. Here's the great thing about him. Talk about writing jokes. Every time I see him, you have no idea what you're going to get. You know, he is a true original. And I was trying to showcase him on my podcast as a comedian.
That's the thing. There's a lot. Like, I'm always shocked when Wayne finds new comics, because he finds new comics all the time. And I'm like, I don't know who this person is. Mostly because I don't hang out in the comedy scene.
Right.
And there's always, like, that's the wonderful thing about doing other people's podcasts and doing other people's comedy shows is you get exposed to somebody new that, you know, like, people focus so much on the big guys. But it's like, you know, like I mentioned Dave Attell, because Dave Attell's basically my comedy. Him and Stephen Wright are the people that, if... whatever, you know.
They're your Mount Rushmore.
Right. But if those guys weren't those guys the first 3 years that you saw, it took work. And you don't know, Eric Hollenbeck might be Dave Attell one day.
Right.
You know? But you're not going to know that if you only focus on who the big people are, you know? And, you know, it's like, look, there's so much opportunity, especially here in Hollywood, you know, almost at Hollywood South, God help me. And here in New Orleans, you have the whole Hollywood South thing where you have people like, whatever, Louis C.K. or whatever coming down, and Patton Oswalt. And
Jamar Neighbors.
Who?
Jamar Neighbors was filming the Key & Peele movie here, and he did my show. Yeah, wow. The Key & Peele movie.
I didn't know about that.
He was, you know, he was filming that movie. He did my show because he was also part of it in the Los Angeles scene.
I'm about to check
you
that
You know what
out.
I'm saying? And so it's like, Why would you try to fuck my shit when...
Right. You might meet somebody who might want to take you, like, under his wing one day.
It's a very small network. It's a very small world. It's a very small scene, really. I mean, it's like, you are really the only show in Metairie, and it's once a month. How difficult... why would you piss off the two people who basically have a once-a-month show in Metairie, and that's the only...
Well, actually, they have had a couple of other ones pop up after us, but
whatever. But it's small. But it's like if there's like 12 people, 13 people who run shows in New Orleans, why wouldn't you want to be nice to all of them and have an exchange?
I'll tell you one better. Why wouldn't you just be nice to people just because you can?
Yeah, just exchange comics with each other, and always be professional. Be professional.
Right.
Say thank you. Come in. You know, it's very, very simple. Right. But it's just. Just be nice.
You can always hate that person in private without, like, ruining business
relationships. Or just don't book them, but don't scream at people. Like, don't go on these ridiculous, pompous ego trips. I mean, what are you, Trump now? Screaming at people? Right. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I've told you, I think I said it on the, because the last time we recorded together, we did, like, one episode of M-Hog, one episode of Highway Diaries, and I think it was your show that I had said, like, I just feel like a large percentage of comics are some of the most sensitive people on earth. And, like, part of that's what makes people funny. But sometimes it's like you can't... like, the people that should be able to take a joke, like, they can.
Right.
Like, they take everything personally.
Right.
And, look, I'm the first to admit, whether you're stand-up or you're a podcaster, we're all narcissists. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing if we weren't narcissistic.
Listen to everything I say. It should be recorded on the internet forever.
I got four... three or four shows. Chase Myers from Baton Rouge was like, how much do you think you have to say to the world? I was like, fair point. I get the fuck off my show, but fair point.
I know Chase. He's a good guy.
He is. Very funny.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just... I'm a little sick of the negativity, and it's not just the comedy community. I feel like podcasting, like I've been... we've been trying to do this with so many communities, trying to say, hey... let's all work together. Let's all try and, like, do stuff together. Because, like, at least on the podcast end, it's like I listen to Adam Carolla and Joe Rogan and all these guys. And even when they're on different networks, they all go on each other's shows. They're all help each other out.
Yeah.
They're not enemies.
Right.
Some of them are, but that's personal, you know?
But, I mean, I think if they are, they would say exactly why they were angry.
Right.
And then when they ask the other person to be the podcast, they would do it and squash the beef. I remember there was a time when, like, Opie and Anthony was, like, they were smashing, they were going after Whoopi Goldberg. And then Whoopi Goldberg showed up. And then Jim Norton said, yeah, that's what a fucking comic does. That's what a comic does. They show up and go, what's the beef, bitch? So it's like Whoopi Goldberg. You know what? It's just a matter of reps in the gym. It's a matter of doing it long. It's a matter of having experience. It's a matter of bombing, you know, doing comedy for 13 years. I mean, I bombed once a week for 13 years. Right. It kind of gives you a thicker skin where it's like, okay, well, I can... I'm not going to take this, get so emotionally invested in every single night that I'm doing this. Hopefully, overall, your graph goes up if you keep writing, if you keep new jokes or like water on your gills, you know? If you don't have new jokes, you start to die as an artist. So it's like, you know, we're going forward, doing this, getting new jokes, like, building towards my hour. So, I don't know. I just,
like I said, like, I'm not focused on Polk or anybody else. And I'm not afraid to argue on stage or otherwise or fight somebody. But it's wasteful.
Yeah.
I'm 36 years old. Do I really want to waste my time with... with somebody that hates me on a local level, you know, or just somebody in general, or do I want to like build something? Which is what, that's really what MHOG's about, is trying to build things. And I've been like, you'll see me on Facebook hashtag build something, and it's just a day, like a reminder to people, hey, you could be fucking around on Facebook talking about whatever, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, or you could be trying to build your own life.
Right.
Which would you rather do? Whether you're a comic or a podcaster, or just somebody who works at the post office. It's wasteful, and it's so high school. That's ultimately what all this stuff is. Everything we just talked about, it's fucking high school shit.
We're just gossiping like a couple of teenage girls on their periods.
I know, and like I've got like a half a chub, you know, that girl out there is showing a little bit of underwear.
Whoa, estrogen. Look, let's talk about Scientology, because you posted a picture of you graduating Disney Academy. It looks like you're in a cult. You're wearing a sea captain's outfit.
I'm wearing bell bottoms. Oh, yeah, you posted the Sea Org thing. Right, right. I did get that. No, that was, you know, today's quote-unquote Throwback Thursday on Instagram, and I was looking through my old Disney College Program pictures, and I had told on our live episode, I had told people about the uniform I used to wear, and it's ugly as sin, including the tightest pants that no one would ever want to see me wearing, and they're not really bell bottoms because of the way I'm shaped. That's kind of how they looked,
right?
And it's pretty gross.
You're pear shaped, so they fringe at the end.
That's being kind. Thank you. No. Actually, you know, the funny thing is, like, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, but I was, like, 50 pounds less, or whatever it was, you
like,
know?
Boy, I look good. As much of an asshole as I look in that fucking outfit, I cut it pretty good.
Cut I always look like an asshole. I mean, I don't know what I'm supposed to do about that, but... No, I was in the Disney College Program.
Wow.
That's what that was from. I drove the monorail for 3 months until they kicked me out.
For what? Licking too much Austrian pussy?
No, it was South African.
Ah.
Hot-ass South African girls.
You were fucking them in, like, the Disney swing?
No, they wouldn't let me fuck them. I could only lick their pussy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good bargain.
South African girls have high standards, you know? They come from such a great place.
Yeah. Lick my bumble clam. That's a Jamaican.
Hey, careful, you're getting the engine started, son. I brought the train a little too close to another train, and they frown upon that. So
you were driving the...
You don't really drive it. You control the speed, and you're supposed to stop at certain points, and I didn't stop when I was supposed to stop.
And you almost murdered 12 people on Space Mountain.
First of all, there was at least 90 people on that train. There was at least 90. If I'm going to kill people, I'm going to go big.
Yeah. Go big or go home.
Right. But no, so they actually transferred me to the Princess Counter in Toontown.
You can do no damage there. The Princess Counter. The safest job.
More than
job.
You think. More damage than you think. But it's more psychological than physical.
Yeah.
And mainly to me, to be honest with you, it was a very demoralizing job.
You were in the sailor suit working the princess counter. Why is that embarrassing?
Actually, in Toontown, the uniform is jeans, which is nice, and then like this Disney-themed old-fashioned Western shirt from, like, the 1950s. So, like, if you looked at it afar, it looked like, what do you call it? I don't know why I'm making bear signs. But, it was like a pattern. And, but when you looked up close, it was little Mickeys in different positions. And, really ugly. Really, I'm going to use the word, that word again, demoralizing. It was very demoralizing. Yeah.
Let's talk about Scientology, because I was in, I have this great class taught by, Henry Griffin, great professor, and it's called Conflict, Concept, and Character. You know, I'm in grad school at UNO, getting my master's in screenwriting and shit, and, he made us read the screenplay of Doubt, a movie with, Philip Seymour Hoffman and, Meryl Streep. It was originally
blah, blah, blah. The thing where he's a priest.
Yeah, the convents and the priests.
See, I thought you were going for the master a second ago.
Well, maybe. Well, it's very related because I kept saying there's one girl in our class who's studying Christian education, wants to do Christian education, and at every chance I get, I'm like, isn't Christian education an oxymoron? And then I kept saying that this obviously these nuns and these priests live together. They're not allowed to fuck. It's a cult. They're in a sexless cult where they have to wear head. I mean, imagine. Okay, well, you're a priest living with nuns. Mm-hmm. Y'all take celibacy oaths. Y'all live next door to each other, and all they're doing is gossiping and and like the priests are fucking little boys, or there's an accusation of it, and the women are just gossiping, trying to take them down. But no one's fucking each other.
But they're
it's
all
ridiculous.
Ugly people. Nobody. They don't want to fuck each other. They're all ugly.
You wouldn't take a blowjob if the lady kept her whole nun outfit on. You wouldn't take a blowjob from an ugly one if it was
does
your first blowjob.
Does she
as
look
a priest?
Like Gidget? I mean Gidget now, like really old.
I'm just saying there's got to be one that is decent looking. Let's say the best looking priest, the best looking lady. Why wouldn't they fuck?
When I went to when I went to De La Salle, which is a local Catholic school.
Yeah.
There was one of the nuns was this little old lady, and during basketball games and football games she would put on, I guess, the cheerleader nun outfit that was polyester and tighter. No, I wouldn't fuck a nun. Like, I still have nightmares about that. Very nice old lady though.
I'm just saying, there's got to be some thirsty bitches in there that are all cray-cray because they ain't getting some D, you know what I'm saying?
But you were in class.
I was in class. I think that Scientologists, and if you're in the Sea Org, okay. Which is the people that they work for like $20 a week, they're often doing manual labor. If you're a bad Sea Org member in Los Angeles, they'll send you out to the desert in California, where they'll basically, it's like a concentration camp. They'll make you walk in a sandy circle for a day, no food or water. Like, they torture people.
See,
until
my
they
mom
become,
would recommend that because she looks at it a way of losing weight.
Right. So they get, but it's like, these are torturous methods of losing weight. This is a really concentration camp, right?
Well, no pain, no gain, man. What, you got no dedication?
I'm just saying, I mean, it blows my mind that Scientology is still a thing. And then it also blows my mind that being Catholic is still a thing. It blows my mind that anyone has any religion. I think all religion is mind control. I think people sometimes like those programs and download them and become devout to a very narrow framework of thinking. But I think that religion is actually a very kind of dangerous thing in the long run, because instead of looking at the complexities of the world, everyone is looking through foggy glasses of angels and demons instead of very nuanced people in gray areas situations. It's more complicated, the real world.
That's become a very popular opinion. I disagree with it totally, just because, like, anytime...
You're religious?
No, not at all. Human beings need something to... Is that dude going to go, like, shoot up the taco joint?
He's just buffing, walking.
Because he's been sitting in that car for a very long time, and all of a sudden he's got a mission. Actually, we might be witnessing a drug deal. Anyway, no, people need something to aspire to. And when they don't have religion, they just find something else. Everybody does. We all, I do, you know. Like, I grew up, like, honestly, I always tell people, my aspirations were mainly from reading comics. Like, I was taught about, like, self-sacrifice and all that, not from religion, even though I grew up Roman Catholic, but primarily from, like, reading Batman and Spider-Man. You know, a lot of who I am is largely, like, extrapolated from me reading comics, you know, my whole life. People will find something, and like all these things where like it was a religious killing, like, you know, you see the Muslim terrorist and something like that. People will find any reason to kill, like, if they're looking to.
Right.
Like, it's just like a lot of that stuff, you know.
If you get killed for drugs or Allah, what's the difference? You got shot in the head.
Right. Like, I always think it's funny that we use the term hate crime. I'm like, is it, what kind of murder isn't hateful, really? Like, oh, well, that guy got paid to do it. Still, right. You're splitting hairs. But I don't know. Like, if I could be religious, if my brain worked that way, I would absolutely, in a heartbeat.
See, here's my thing about this. Is like, for me, I think my religion is comedy. It's when people laugh at something, that they laugh in the truth of comedy. There's a book called Truth in Comedy that Del Close and Sharna Halpern wrote, all about improv. But basically what they're saying is, if something's funny, or in a scene, when you start to an improv scene, whatever's true about their relationship, if you call out the truth, that's always going to be a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that comedy is a very good yardstick of truth in general, and if you try to get, you can get as existential as you want with that. But my other point is, I'm building something for myself. Do something productive with your religion as well. Your religion could be basketball. If you become a master of basketball, you have a certain idea that it takes an incredibly dedicated focus to be good at something. And through learning hard work in basketball, you can learn hard work in anything. That's your discipline of the world.
Well, that's the thing. Anything in this world can be taken and turned into a weapon.
Right.
You know, water is the blood of life. But you can drown. You can literally drink too much water and die from water poisoning, you know? Like, religion's done a lot of great things in the world. And there are plenty of, like, Muslims who live great lives, you know? Like, people make fun of Mormons, but Mormons all seem to be pretty nice people.
Yeah, you know? But also it's like, this is what, you know,
bad person's going to be a bad person no matter what they believe.
I know, but it's like, if you have a friend, right, and they're in an abusive relationship, right, and they're always like, oh, I got welts on my face, and you're like, did Steve do that to you? No, I fell down the stairs. When you're, like, committed into a relationship.
Well, maybe she should learn to listen.
When you're committed into a relationship for a long time, you can't see the bad in the person. And then slowly, if they're worse, slowly, 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 you could spend years in an emotionally or physically abusive relationship. I don't think that there's any difference with Scientology than an abusive relationship. There, it's like, imagine if your religion that said that it knew everything and you knew nothing and you needed it for all your truth. You know, truth came from Scientology, not anything that you could ever say. So you need to get all your truth from us.
Right.
We're going to scam you at every level. Mm. We're going to, you want a spacesuit to go to Mars or whatever? That's $20,000. I don't know what the hell you want auditing sessions? Well, okay, they're 50. They're just going to name ridiculous numbers, and people are going to pay them because, you know, their whole life, and then eventually they go bankrupt, and then they're working as an indentured servant to pay off some spiritual debt. That is a very vicious program.
And absolutely, and I actually know people in side churches that they give, you know, like, not necessarily Joel Osteen, but that sort of thing, where
they're
giving money to these people, and it's like, you don't have money yourself.
Right.
And they have a yacht.
Right.
You know, and it's the same thing with Scientology. Look,
Vatican.
I think, like I said, like, and I'm not really a proponent of the Vatican or any of that stuff. And I'm certainly not a proponent of Scientology. But some people, everybody needs something to aspire to varying degrees. Like, I needed a little less. And my brain, I grew up Roman Catholic, but I can't justify certain things. I believe in something that we constitute as God, but afterlife, as much as I'd love to believe in that, I just can't. Like, it doesn't work for me. But then there's people who are essentially lower functioning people, less self-aware than me, who might need the rigidity. And then there's people above them who like religion, but they don't view it as like absolute truth. You know, like, there's that woman in Kentucky that people are talking right now that they're saying, you know, God told me not to issue gay marriage licenses, and people are going,
right,
she shouldn't have to. And I was like, no, she's welcome to not accept gay marriage, but this isn't like those bakeries or pizza shops where people are being sued in private businesses. This is somebody who's expected to uphold the law. But she's telling people, like, God spoke to me. God didn't fucking speak to you.
Well, she's also running a program of someone who put that in her head, that you should not be gay.
But it would be something else if it wasn't that.
But it's like, my I guess my other point is, I was trying to tell, because I watched my friend get gouged from Scientology.
So you knew a Scientologist.
Yeah. Okay. She had no money. She was in a marriage with a complete doofus that she hated and complained about him constantly. And I met him, a complete doofus. And so, but then when you try to say, hey, you're like in a cult, and actually, if you get to this level after spending $30,000, when you get to OT level 3, they're going to teach you all this alien shit that they showed in the South Park episode. That's at OT level 3. What OT level are you of Scientology? And she was like, oh, I haven't even gone clear yet. And it's like, because to go clear, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And that's when all the alien spirits are divulged of your body.
Yes. But my point is, you can save that person a lot of time if you can get through to them about what happens at the next higher level that they're blindfolded to. And I think that through looking at how... Do you know that, like, all congressmen have bank accounts with the Vatican Bank? And Catholic churches all over the country have tax-free real estate? Do you know that NYU is the second biggest holder of real estate in New York City, in Manhattan? NYU's number two. Number one, the Catholic Church. Okay? There's issues here. There's huge issues here. So I'm not saying that every religion's bad. I'm probably saying the best religion is when you go take ayahuasca in the Peruvian jungle. That's probably the best religion. You do it once, you're done with religion for the rest of your life.
Okay, but there's also, you can't conflate the Vatican with the belief system
don't like being exploited. I don't like any people exploiting people for a tithing.
In every way, every day.
But like, for nothing. We do it. You buy one book, the Bible, and study it privately. I get it. When you go every day and put a check, like some of your earnings, when you're toiling your ass off for that check, taxes are taken out of it. All this stuff. Every time you pay money, it's sales tax.
I agree, you're struggling. If that person feels at peace for it, does it really make a difference?
Wouldn't they feel at more peace if they could have more leisure time to...
some things work for some people that don't work for others. I never have a problem. I don't have a problem with anything insofar as you're not hurting another human being. And there's plenty that's wrong with the Vatican. There's a lot of the reason that I'm not Catholic is because Catholicism is a bureaucratic religion. Like, we're talking about... gay marriage and all that, which, I mean, I don't know why anyone cares, but okay. But masturbation, for instance, like, you're told masturbation is a sin, you shouldn't masturbate. Masturbation wasn't always a sin. Like, it became a sin eventually, and has been for a long time, but it's a little wishy-washy. But just the simple belief in certain tenets that gives you a little peace, like I said, I'd be all for that. But it's what you do with it and who you are as a person. But again, like, I know people, I'll be honest with you, I have more problem with atheists these days than I do religious people. And a lot of that is because I see nine or, well, I'm just making up a number, but, you know, I see much more atheist posts telling me what to believe than religious posts these days. And it's by a major factor. I don't really want to see... I don't really need to be told what to believe in any direction.
Yeah.
And a lot of people these days treat atheism and, frankly, science like it's a religion. And I think that's pretty bad. Like, I get much more annoyed by somebody who tells me, this is the truth because Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, the science guy, say it, than by somebody who tells me he is risen. Because I'm like, well, okay, well, the religious person is talking about something from their, you know, whatever you want to call it, made-up religious perspective. The other person's talking about something that's actually deals with, like, physics and stuff like that, and that's not the way science works. You don't get to just say, well, scientists say this now, so therefore that's how it is. Like, there's a quote that I fucking hate, and this is why I dislike Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't know for certain that he said it. It's always positive. I've seen this a lot, but maybe he didn't say it, so I'll give that. But there's a meme going that's been going around for a long time that says, it's his face, and it says, the great thing about science is it's true whether you believe it or not. Categorically false. That's not what science is. That's not how science works. Science is our ongoing exploration of the universe and how it works. When you say something like science is fact, number one, it shows that you don't understand science. Number two, it's against science itself.
I think what he's saying is let's take when...
He's saying I don't like religion.
No, I think what he's saying
He says that a lot.
Well, let's... People used to think that the world was flat.
Right.
If you took a vote on how many people think the world is flat versus a couple motherfuckers who started to think it was round, the results of that vote is irrelevant. The truth is the earth is round. So it's not like...
The truth is we understand it now, but if you ask that, you know, whatever... What is it? I don't know how many hundreds of years ago, if you'd asked the science people of the age if the world was flat, they'd all tell you it was flat.
Right. Well, they were paid by the Vatican.
Science is...
Who knows?
Science is ongoing, is my point.
I see what you're saying.
And so you can't treat science like it's religion. Like, a religion... Religion is a large metaphor that some people take a little too seriously.
So what you're saying is just science, the term science, is this pursuit of the truth and right. Not
science
the truth.
Is a method. It's our way of understanding the universe, and so is religion, but religion you can always take as a metaphor. You should never take science in the way you take religion. You shouldn't make it into a religion.
But also, if you get to a point with science where you're orbiting the Earth in a Hubble telescope and you turn around and you take a photograph from all the angles possible,
right?
Then you go, oh, that's round now. Now that's round, and that's a fact, and we don't really have to talk about that aspect.
Fair enough.
It's not like that's a evolving situation. So my example before of how what I think he was saying is if you took a vote of how... For example, let's say we found out how to go in the past, and we could calculate exactly how long the universe is, or how long the Earth is. There's Christians who go around saying it's 3,000 to 6,000 years old.
Okay.
Oh, let's take a vote. Is it 3,000 to 6,000 years old? Actually, the answer is fucking no. Your vote is irrelevant.
Okay, but
let me
ask you this: How does that affect their lives, really?
But I guess it's like that. It doesn't.
It doesn't practically. Like, look, I believe in evolution, but these people are like, you can't let them teach this.
Well, what about abstinence-only education? Hey, kids, don't...
Oh, it's one of my big problems. I have a huge problem with I'm not for abortion, but the fact that the church goes out and says, well, no, you can't use birth control, you're just not allowed to have sex. Well, in the history of humankind, everybody fucks.
Yeah.
And most of the people who go to church, they fuck, and they fuck before they put a ring on their finger. You know, most of them. I have a huge problem with that. It's detrimental. Like, there's some things that I think the church does need to progress on, and other things that I'm like, no, you're good.
So, like, you know, I think I see exactly where Neil deGrasse Tyson is coming from with that quote, where he's saying, well, whether or not you want to teach, like, abstinence-only education, super don't, because if you do teach abstinence-only education...
But that has nothing to do with science.
Your numbers of teen pregnancy is going to go up.
Right.
And... When we know when a 15-year-old who hasn't finished high school gets pregnant,
right.
The statistics of the trajectory of that kid's life is abysmal. So
I think you're extrapolating a lot from a simple sentence.
But what I'm saying is, well, it's a philosophical debate.
Dude, I've listened to the dude talk. He was just attacking religion, and that's not what science is about either.
Well, I think religion sucks, and I don't think... I mean, here's what my problem with... If any institution is bureaucratic enough where they have a brick and mortar and they got to pay rent every month, mm-hmm. it's going to be exploitative because that person's like, hey, I set up shop. I don't just want to have this much money. I don't just want to have this many wives. I want to have this many. So I need to sling more bullshit. I need to sling more bullshit. I need to expand like a corporation of knowing stuff. No, if you have a book, I get it. You write one book. That someone buys a book, they go privately and read it themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't like someone having that much power over the control of people's minds. I think it's very, very dangerous.
But again, number one, you keep conflating the religion with the organization, and they're two separate things. And number two, the people who are going to be led astray or led to do stupid things, they're going to do it no matter what. Like I said, there's plenty of atheists these days that treat atheism like a religion.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of them talking, saying things that don't make any sense from a logical or practical standpoint. But they think, oh, I'm a free thinker. I'm not one of those religious people. I'm a free thinker. I'm an atheist. No, you're not. You just have a different religion that you don't view as a religion.
I mean,
you know, there's plenty of free thinkers, but on some level, we're all sheep. I'm not original. I'll never tell anybody that I'm one of the few people that thinks for myself. I'm fucking led by the dick a lot, in many different respects. You know, we all are. And look, I mean, I know like there's no actual text from Socrates, but I learned it in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, so that's what I'll go with. The only true knowledge is knowing that you know nothing.
Yeah, I'm a agnostic. I don't know.
Right.
But I mean. I think when I look around, I think I'm pretty smart, you know? And if I don't know, like, these motherfuckers definitely know shit, you know? So...
Maybe they know one thing that you don't.
Maybe.
Just like in comedy, dude, you can always learn something from somebody. No matter how stupid they may be, they might understand something or have perspective on something that you don't.
Yeah, they might bake an excellent cake. Talk about any kind of life, how the world works.
Well, who the fuck doesn't like cake, motherfucker? Like, we might have beef. You don't like cake?
I love cake. But what I'm saying is...
We're okay. We won't have to have a roast battle.
What I'm saying is, I wouldn't take their... If they were like, yeah, but also in the afterlife, okay, I don't have to listen to anything that you say about this because I know that you've been programmed by opinions that aren't your own. So whatever... babbling starts to happen.
But you've been programmed by opinions that aren't your own either.
No, I know that really nobody knows. I the only thing I'm pretty sure of is everyone's fucking stupid.
But I just told you that I got that from fucking Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That's a form of programming. Look, one of the reasons that I hate Jon Stewart. I used to be a huge Jon Stewart fan. I think as a comedian, he was brilliant. And then one day. He got an award for journalism, and he was like, "Oh no, I'm pretty smart." And he said a lot of things that, like on a comedy show, that people took seriously. And so he started saying more things that people took seriously. Now some of it he was right, some of it he's wrong, but people started treating him like he was a news source. Right. And when people would call him out on stuff, he would say, "Oh well, wait, I'm a comedian. I mean, not really, but kinda."
Right.
You know, which is why that has nothing to do with anything. But I'll always respect Bill Maher over Jon Stewart because Bill Maher. Doesn't fucking back down and say, you know, like, oh, I'm just a comedian. If he said it, he stands behind it, you know?
Right.
But plenty of people got their news from The Daily Show. Now, whether you get it from ABC, CNN, Fox, New York Post, whatever, you're also getting a version of reality rather than reality.
Yeah, corporate reality where they're trying to sell you... drugs or whatever.
So it's no different than getting it from The Daily Show, but just like Scientology, one of them you probably shouldn't take as seriously because, you know, to begin with that it's a joke. Scientology came from someone that we know for a fact was a science fiction author and on record a liar. But people believe it, and I mean, I don't know to what extent those stories are true. I assume most of them are. but I've never been in a fucking Scientologist camp. You know? And yeah. Maybe they might actually use, like, fucking brain control or some shit, or maybe they just find people who are super susceptible.
But, like, facts are facts, if you believe it or not. Like, it is a fact that he's a science fiction writer.
Right.
You know? Like, if they're like, oh, no, actually, he was channeling. It's like, no, he, like, early in his career, like, he was a science fiction writer. People mm-hmm. could extrapolate Scientology and start to believe whatever right. they want, but their beliefs are irrelevant because they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm big on that. Like, if you're wrong, your beliefs are kind of irrelevant. You know what
but
I mean?
But someone on the opposite of the argument thinks the same thing about you.
About me personally, or one very particular fact that I'm talking about?
In this day and age, does it really, like, it's kind of splitting hairs. In reality, it's not, but the way people treat it is.
No, I like talking about ideas. Ideas don't get personal for me. We've probably got an hour, right?
Yeah. We're actually an
hour 15. Yeah.
Like I said, the reason I don't get angry about anything is because I don't take myself or the world that seriously. You know, I saw something the other day. They were talking about that little girl that got shot, you know, uptown or downtown, whatever. I think it was downtown. And somebody said, like, oh, yeah, I guess the Confederate statues did that. And I was like, okay, I'm with you on the, like, the Confederate shit is stupid and a distraction. But a little girl died. Like, my bullshit isn't as important as that little girl's life.
Right.
So why the fuck are we talking about Confederate statues when a little girl was murdered for
right.
doing a fucking
yeah,
homework?
Yeah, that's gross.
And I see a lot of that on Facebook from people that I respect, and a lot of different people. Like, if it's one person, I can just hide it. But when I see five people saying that kind of shit, I'm like, what the fuck is... Like, and I know these people. They're not bad people. Right. They're not intending any harm. But... You know, we all get caught up in our own bullshit. And I try to remind myself, and I'm not, by no means am I saying, like, I'm enlightened, because I'm not. I just told you a little while ago, that I, like, a man said something about our show, and my first instinct was, let's go down to his show and beat the fuck out of him. And then I try to remind myself, oh, wait, you're an adult. You're 36 years old. Like, you got your bullshit, you know. And right. I've also done things to people that I'm sure... unintentionally, but I'm sure they took and went like, I want to go fuck, let's go fuck this dude up. You know, we all have our own bullshit. I just don't take myself or the world that seriously because it's not. You know?
It's like, not that serious.
Right. Mm-hmm. Some of it is, but most of the stuff that we deal with isn't. You know?
It is weird when people get furiously angry. It's like, we're not doing brain surgery over here. Like, we're trying to tell dick jokes, like, keep it in perspective.
That's what I want. I want more dick and pussy jokes.
Basically.
And rape jokes. I mostly like rape jokes. I'm being honest with you.
Whoa.
If I could just stick
that's
with
my
rape
trigger
jokes.
Word. How dare you? That's my trigger word. Let's never
that's
talk
always,
about it.
That's always the one that people seem to be a stickler for. Like, we're not allowed to have rape jokes in this day and age. It's like, rape's not funny.
But, like...
it depends on who you're raping.
It's... What? I also think it's hilarious that, like, people who say that also are like, oh, I, you know, I opened for Louis C.K. once a year and a half ago. And so from that
right.
platform, I will say this. Don't make rape jokes. Really? Well, Louis C.K. makes a lot of rape jokes. Stupid. So why are you putting that on your resume all the time?
Right.
Just because he's famous? So are we looking at the ideas?
I'm
going to
go
ideas?
One step beyond and say... I think Louis C.K. is mostly famous for his rape jokes. I don't think I don't think anyone would think it was funny if he didn't, like, talk about raping somebody at least once a week.
Right.
I want to go on the record. I want that, you know, that can be in a headline. Adam of the MHOG podcast says that Louis C.K. is only funny because he rapes people.
That was extrapolated.
Mentally.
That was extrapolated.
Mentally.
All right. We've mentally raped the audience enough. This has been both a Highway Diary podcast, episode 135 with Adam from Metal Hand of God, and episode 205 or 206 of Metal Hand
like
of God.
That.
It's been very pared down. This has been more of a journalistic thing.
Right.
We're recording next to a highway. You hear cars going by.
So I guess I'm supposed to end this the way it always ends. See if I can do this. Keep it metal!
This has been another episode of Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Adam from Mill Hand to God.
Thank you, Eric Hollerbach.
Okay, later.
Bye.